Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast. I'm just doing great and fine.
It is Tuesday.
Pat just had a Mets meltdown.
It's Tuesday.
Before hitting record.
October 4th, 2022. We're in the fall. That's Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, what will we be discussing?
Oh, geez. We're going to talk about the prices of auctions continuing to go down, video game auctions. We're going to talk a little bit about fandom, I guess, NFTs. You know, WWE 2K tattoo controversy. Google Stadia is dead. Your voicemails and more.
Woo! You got through it, Ian.
On this episode.
You got through it.
I'm very, very tired.
Woo! Okay.
Sleep was not good last night.
We talked about how great Costco is, the American dreams Costco.
We sure did. We filleted Costco in the bonus bit.
At patreon.com/CU podcast. And at first I said, oh, we're not going to get 20 minutes out of this. We got 20 minutes on the dot and I had to cut it off.
Could have gone another 20.
We could have gone another 20. We went over the
We didn't even get into the electronics.
We didn't get into that stuff. We didn't get into a lot of like the chairs and you know,
sometimes a big pile of jeans in the middle of the store.
Oh, yes.
I've done
socks,
that before.
The book section, the vitamins, the protein drink section, all that good stuff.
We like jeans, $10. Okay, I mean, they're probably going to suck, but I'll buy a pair of jeans for $10.
12 socks for $4? Okay. And of course,
six of them will be usable.
And of course, the glorious outdoor
food court.
Food court. And like the prices were lower than what I thought they were. I did get the hot dog, right? The hot dog's... The quarter pound
hot dog. Well, everyone knows the hot dog is $1.50. That's like the classic, like,
but I didn't realize
thing to know about
Costco. I didn't realize it was 50 cents for a fountain drink still.
That's 59.
That's 59, excuse me. 59. I did not realize. And then everything else is so cheap still. Under $2 for a slice of pizza.
Yep. We can talk more. We can redo it.
We could.
Pay money for it. Pay money for it and go listen to what we said about Costco.
You know, Costco prices stay the same, but you know what continues to go up? Video game prices, especially Sony. And on the tail end of $70 games, they're doing a remaster. I try to work that in. Another remaster.
That's all right.
Last of Us remaster. Is that out yet or is it coming out?
It's out.
It's out.
I think.
For $70, and people are complaining because it's the second time they've remade or remastered this Last of Us.
One was a remaster, one was a remake.
Whatever. It's within like 9 years.
Yep. So, well, here's... Never, never a company to let them to not one up themselves. Sony said, "Hold my beer" to their other hand, and they are releasing a remaster or remake. They're not really sure yet. Is in the works for Horizon Zero Dawn, a game that came out in February of 2017. Excuse me. And it seems to make sense, I think. Well, it doesn't make sense, but I think what they're doing is, like, The Last of Us 1 remake was basically, like, used all the, I think it took all, like, the quality of life upgrades from Part 2 and, you know, and put them into, and put Part 1 into that engine, I guess. I think that's probably what they're trying to do here. They want the original game to more closely reflect the most recent game that they put out. No matter how you look at it, though, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely fucking ridiculous.
This IGN article...
It wasn't even like an early game on the PS4. It was like a mid-life cycle game on the PS4.
Adam Bankhurst reporting this in IGN. So first off, he notes there was a PC release in 2020. And that release added improved draw distance, higher frame rates, but it wasn't considered a remaster or remake. It's the probably closest thing to it, though, because if you got a nice graphics card.
Close to a remaster, yeah.
That's the way I'm starting to look at this. It's like, well, Ian, instead of just having a PC game and updating your graphics card to get a better version of it, we're just going to sell you all a new version of every fucking game that comes out every 3 years.
Right, and you know, I think that's where like PC gaming has the advantages, because you can take those games and drive up the sliders, I guess.
Draw distance, high resolution,
the
higher
options, all
frame
that.
Rate, or mods. GTA 5 famously has mods that look incredible. They look lifelike. Graphics
on a console, though, that's where it matters. You get what you get. You're not going to find ways to boost the performance. That's the term I was looking for. Jesus Christ, boost the performance.
The sliders. There's going to be
sliders. Can do the sliders.
Sliders. That was a good show. I like sliders a lot.
My dad loved that.
I had a crush on the girl with the short hair.
I don't think I ever watched it.
You never watched Sliders?
No.
Oh, Jerry McConnell. Horizon Zero Dawn is going to get a Netflix series, so the theory is that this and Last of Us, since they have movies or or series.
Just to keep them looking good in the public eye, even though it's the last Horizon Dawn looks like the PS4 version looks great.
This is a cash-in.
Yes.
This is a cash-in.
This is a true cash-in.
If you told me maybe, okay, this is going to be like $35, this game. It's going to be, quote-unquote, budget $40. It's a full-price game. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah. There's no way Sony's going to do that for anything less than $70.
No. That's what's annoying about
it. You're going to pay and say thank you to Sony.
He said that kind of creepily. Yep. You're going to pay and say thank you to Ian. Fandom acquires GameSpot and Screen Junkies and everything else.
I don't know a whole lot about this.
I don't know about the fandom conglomerate.
But the constant pulling shit in under same umbrellas is never something I like to see. Soon it's all going to be Disney, Microsoft, and fandom. So Metacritic...
And Embracer and
yeah,
Tencent.
Embracer. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Absolutely. Embracer and Tencent.
GameSpot, Metacritic, TV Guide.
I didn't even know TV Guide was still around.
Fanatical, Comic Vine. I've heard of Comic Vine. I don't know what's on it. Cord Cutters. Don't know what that is. Giant Bomb. Gigantic site. Game Facts, one of the oldest resources of gaming news. Go back to like the mid-90s. And Screen Junkies, which I've heard of. So they're trying to get like news. They're trying to get resources here. They're trying to get like fresh content sites. Metacritic is another resource. They're trying to just pull in everything.
Right.
Deal worth $55 million.
Honestly, that doesn't seem like as much money as I would have thought.
I don't know. I don't know how much money
any of this shit is worth.
I don't know what a site like GameFAQs
is bringing through. True. I mean, I still use GameFAQs because I'm old and I like text-based stuff. But I mean, I doubt that many, people who have grown up in the modern age are going to GameFAQs for text-based walkthroughs. They're using YouTube.
Yeah. I still go for information when you're doing certain guidebooks. It's helpful.
Information.
This was owned by Red Ventures before. $55 million deal. Fandom was founded by Wikipedia's co-founder Jimmy Wales in 2004 and entrepreneur Angela Beasley. Mm. So there you go. So Fandom's taking control. We're thrilled to add these powerful authoritative brands into the Fandom platform, which will expand our business capabilities and provide immersive content for our partners, advertisers, and fans. I don't understand what GameFAQs does for that. The trusted insights, ratings, and content they provide will make us a one-stop shop for fans across their entertainment and gaming
journey.
It's just scary because you don't want them to shut down something like GameFAQs. There's so much information on that site.
Right.
So
that would be awful to see something like that go away.
It's like Atari trying to buy up Moby Games. It's like you don't want them to shut or something like that. There's so much information. They're not perfect, but you need them.
I think GameFAQs was already under that umbrella.
Under what umbrella?
The fandom one. I don't think that's part of the recent acquisition. Oh. I think they've been under fandom for a while, so if fandom hasn't done anything bad to them already, I don't think they will.
Okay, you might be right. Yeah, that's one on the list.
That a list was these... just... This is everything they have, but what they just acquired was not GameFAQs. I don't believe.
I mean, it says in the first article that including online publishers, Comic Vine, GameFAQs, GameSpot. So
okay. Well, hopefully they don't.
We'll see about that. NFT trading has collapsed more and more. It's like a black hole.
Yeah, I don't really have a ton to say on it other than we've been covering this and we know it's a nightmare.
For a year and a half we've been on what the fuck's NFT to, oh my god, this is a weird, dumb concept to, why are people putting money into this to now is a disaster and people are losing money as we had predicted and everyone else.
So yeah, NFT trading volumes have collapsed 97% from the January peak. No surprises. And I got to say, going through like, you know, seeing the occasional like NFT Twitter threads that are still out there, the people that are left are really trying to put on a strong face about it.
I saw a thread about
buy the dip. Buy the dip in NFTs.
How to survive in an NFT bear market. Like, that's a real fucking thing. That's like saying that there's a fucking Beanie Baby bear market. No, there's just
it was a market and now it's not.
It's just a speculative bubble and it bursts and it's nothing. It's like done. That's it. That's how this stuff usually works out. There's no speculation at ultimatetender.com now. We know what's there. We know we have good stuff. We know we got RBI baseball stickers. We have the enamel pin, which you can't see because the Halloween basket's in front here. You got the stickers. You got the stickers. You got the limited sticker. It's limited. You got the See You Podcast stickers. You got Danny approved. You got Pat and Frank stickers at ultimatetender.com and the certain guidebooks for sale as well. I'm going to be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/country code! point. Ian is not in the chat no. on Wednesday. Mm-mm. He's not in the chat. That's actually a command. And then we will be at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, our triumphant return after 3 years out. That's going to be in, God, a week and a half. We're going to be on a flight. October 15th and 16th. That's so weird.
I mean, I'm leaving next Wednesday, so this is a week away, and that's just
you're leaving
popping my brain. Yeah.
And then, so we're going to be there. We're going to have a panel on Saturday afternoon, mm-hmm. a live podcast panel. It should be fun. Then I think I have a panel on Sunday as well. And then the next week, I will be in Arlington, Texas for Retropalooza. That is the 22nd and 23rd of October. That's what's going to be. Fun times are happening. Also at PRGE, the Blockbuster Championships is returning. So famously, the last Blockbuster on Earth, it's a mom and pop. They just basically kept the branding after corporate went down and, you know, franchisees. So the last one is in Oregon. James Rolfe did a video about visiting it. It's not that far out from where the convention is. I think it's like 20 minutes. I don't think it's too far.
Okay.
Something like that. So powered by Double Jump Events and hosted by the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, the Blockbuster World Video Game Championship 3, since the last one was what, like 94, 95, will create new memories for a new generation. It's free to enter for all. We didn't talk about this before. So they're going to have a Blockbuster room set up, like an experience room, like how like the store looks still, which is cool. Portland does like to have it.
I like it when they do that sort of thing. Like the 1 year, our friend Stefan did the counselor's corner room.
That's right.
And then out on the floor, they usually do like a 70s style room with like a just an area with like a couch and like a wooden TV, you know.
And a shag carpet. They usually do 70s. And they usually do an 80s one as well. They usually do two at Portland.
Yep.
Which is nice there. So the games that will be played there, they're going to focus on, let's see. When Sega Saturn dominated the 32-bit wars, and Atari Jaguar was the best-selling cartridge-based 64-bit system. So I guess they're doing like an alternate reality on this. Then again, it might have been the best cartridge. No, it wasn't. Super Nintendo was probably, N64 was way above Jaguar. Jaguar sold like dick. But anyway, this is an alternate reality. So the round one is Saturn Bomberman, the 10-player one. Single elimination, match mode, battle mode, wide stage, singles. Can't imagine having a shrunken 10-player. No draws. First player to win three battles moves on to round two. Wow, okay. That's going to be tense. So only one out of 10 moves on. That's where I will not do well. Like, the second game I would do well at. The second game is called Downfall OG Plus. This is like it's a platformer, arcade-style, free runner, but constantly it scrolls upwards. You got to keep from falling up on platforms. You can't fall down. You can't fall up. And there's, like, fruits to pick up. It's an interesting-looking game. It's a homebrew, so that will be for the grand prize. So there's only two rounds. And so the first round is on Saturday, and the second round is on Sunday. The grand prize is $1,000 in PRGE Exhibitor Hall shopping spree. You're going to have half a day to spend it on Sunday, so I guess you really got to run around. So if I won one of those prizes, Ian, I might have to just run around or just give it away or just maybe use it for next year. I don't know how that would work out. That's an interesting one. I might enter it.
Yeah, I think you should. Give it a go.
It's 11:30 a.m. is round one. Our panel, I believe, is at 12:15, so I'm not sure how that's going to work out. I might have to ask to be the first one to play. Get in early. That's fun if they're doing something like that, though. I honestly would be more into it if they have like a trophy, like some sort of like trophy.
Sure.
That'd be nice.
All right. So this is one that we probably talked about this 5 years ago, 4 years ago, whenever this was. Yeah. But the WWE 2K Orton tattoo artist wins the lawsuit against Take-Two 2K. So this is interesting with implications, and it's interesting in a couple of ways. Basically, what happened is Randy Orton was featured in a WWE 2K game, and he had some tattoos on him that were the original artwork of a tattoo artist, and the tattoo artist sued for infringement. It's not fair use, basically.
Yeah, copyright.
Copyright. And I mean, kind of surprisingly, I think here they sided with the tattoo artist, mm-hmm. and basically, she was paid. She was entitled to $3,750 for the usage of her tattoo designs. But the main point, one of the other main points, is that they determined that. So basically, all in all, the jury had to make decisions regarding three major points: fair use, the dollar amount of potential damages, and whether the tattoo designs led to any video game profits. And the jury ruled in favor of Catherine Alexander for fair use. And then
that it was not fair
use. It was not fair use. They said she was entitled to $3,750 for the usage of her tattoo designs. But the jury ruled, and of course, the tattoo designs did not contribute to the success of the WWE 2K games. It's tough to prove there was some sort of damages there, and yes, that's usually what needs to be proven. So going forward, it's interesting because this is totally... this is a very new thing, and I don't think this has ever come up with tattoos before. You may have to license out the tattoos to include them in a game, an athlete's tattoos. But if you don't, there's no damages. So
minuscule damages that if you get a lawyer, like, it's not worth your time.
Right. And that's the thing. $3,750 is, I can't imagine that's really worth the amount of time spent.
Think about all the movies The Rock is in. He famously has entire arm... yeah, you know, sleeves covering him.
Mm-hmm.
So now in theory, is that artist allowed to go back and sue for all the movies that The Rock appeared in?
Right.
That's what's so weird. Because what this says in theory is that once you get a tattoo, you don't no longer own 100% your likeness and image of your body.
Right. And that's kind of terrifying.
That's the slippery slope. And that's what I tried to bring up originally. I remember there was a couple artists went at me about what about the rights of the artist, but it's like, how do you separate that out? Am I now like controlled in a weird sense by someone else?
I get it with art that's not on a body, but like once it's on your body, yes, that's different.
I looked at it, I think I made it, try to make an analogy about what if a furniture company sued because furniture in a living room was featured in a movie. It's like once you buy it and it's part of your natural environment, like that's part of what it is, the process of getting tattoo. It's like someone's going to walk around with it. Like that's how it's used. That's the use of a tattoo. You walk around with it. Someone commissions art, you can use that in a myriad of ways. But a tattoo is you walk around with it, and it's not a featured part. So it's not a trademark image. Like on CM Punk, whenever this Pepsi tattoo was always taken out,
yeah,
because that's a trademark.
Sure.
But this is not. This is why I think it was a slippery slope.
CM Punk and his stupid shitty Pepsi tattoo.
I don't mind that. That's not the worst thing about CM Punk.
Pepsi plunge was a much worse thing than the Pepsi tattoo. The Pepsi plunge is an awful move.
Okay. I don't remember him using that in WWE.
I know that was like indie era.
But it's a slippery slope, obviously, because this for music videos, for movies, for TV shows. But it's glad they said it has nothing to do with success, because of course it doesn't.
Right.
No one goes to see The Rock's movies because of his tattoos.
No.
Like no one goes to see Danny Trejo has a ton of tattoos. You know, like going back, you know, probably 40 years. It's a weird thing, and I think it's going to be appealed. But I don't know how much money they made or lost based upon paying lawyers for this. Maybe they expected to get paid $100,000, they only got $3,750. But the fact that it was declared fair use, not fair use, was shocking, I think, to a lot of people that I saw discussing it. So there you have it there. What else is going on, Ian? What else we got going on? Nintendo is embracing the grassroots Smash community. There's a good article.
Oh, this snuck up on me.
Snuck up on you.
Sorry.
I pasted it a few days ago. So this is interesting just because we talked about how this was changing over the past year. What was it? Panda Global.
We did bring up Panda Global before in a previous intro. And they're doing the first officially licensed Super Smash Bros. Circuit. Series of tournaments throughout 2022 will all lead up to the Panda Cup finale from December 16th to 18th. This is from IGN. At the Los Angeles event, we'll offer a 100K prize pool.
And this is what you get when you get Nintendo back in it.
For 32 of the best Super Smash Ultimate players and Smash Bros. Melee players across the country. Interestingly enough, that they are recognizing Smash Brothers Melee.
You get what you want.
They say, you know, for Nintendo, the Panda Cup was a really important kind of step for us in finding a way to partner with the community because they've been so famously bad at it in the past. Finding a way that they can partner with a company like Panda, who's been in the community, knows the history of the community, and is really familiar with all the grassroots effort that have gone to it. So basically, Panda knows what's going on with it. Nintendo is basically hopping on board and trusting that they are going to, you know, basically handle this right.
And the qualifiers will be at the grassroots ones that have existed before, it sounds like. So that's
sure.
So they're working it with that. It's like, hey, you're going to be an official part at a smaller level for a qualifier. So, it's the best of both worlds, I guess. You got Nintendo backing them for a big event. You got the grassroots ones, the smaller ones getting recognized in some official capacity.
Yeah, this will hopefully start to breed some goodwill between Nintendo and the Smash Brothers community because they always seem completely opposed.
Sure. Nintendo shows its panda for its ability to engage and organize the Smash Brothers grassroots community that has built itself over the years and give it the official backing of Nintendo's brand. We've been in the community for 8.5 years. We understand it very intrinsically. We know what it needs. We know it. We have that vision. So this is just a marketing, you know, loss leader for Nintendo. They're not making money directly off of this. They're putting in money. It's just to keep the community going. And then obviously eventually there'll be a new Smash Brothers game. But like that would sell regardless. But so like I said, like,
I think it's going to be a long time before there's a new Smash Brothers
game. Oh, Sakurai's fucking done.
Yeah.
He's just fucking done. He's just, he finally stopped doing his tweets, you said, every day of Smash Brothers.
And he started his YouTube channel. He's done with the Smash Brothers.
Do you think Smash Brothers will be like how the Mario Kart probably might become? Just, we'll just keep adding on tracks and little things and just.
Well, they did. I mean, they gave us 2 expansion seasons.
I mean, in the future, like 5 years from now, it would just be like, here's a, it'd be the core game. Like,
I think Mario Kart and we've talked about this before. I think Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers have a good chance going forward of within the first 2 years of the new Nintendo system, they release a Smash Brothers and a Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. And then they just continue to iterate on that for the rest of the lifespan of that system, as opposed to putting out like a 9 or, you know, putting out another one. I think we will see Mario Kart and Smash Brothers become Nintendo's first kind of like real games as service.
Sure.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Unless they just said, hey, on the Super Switch, you're just gonna get the same game. We're just going to keep selling you more DLC.
Well, I think at some point people are going to want to see mechanics switched up. And I think that's the thing that,
I don't personally, I think they're perfect.
Well, I like them, but the people who play like Mario Kart Online now, they've all got their best builds. They know all the stats. I mean, you've kind of maximized what you can do on the game. They've solved it. They've cracked the code. And people want to see little changes and things to make the game competitive again. I love the Mario Kart 8.
Nerf some stuff, maybe?
I love the Mario Kart 8 mechanics, but there's got to be a shift to a part 9 where handling changes a little bit or something happens, because not all the Mario Kart games feel the same. Or you put in new car parts. Basically, you've got to bring the playing field back down to zero.
You got to level it a little bit.
Yeah, you got to level
it. All right, so just nerf some things. That's all.
Well, sure, you could do that.
You can do that. Nerf the foam wheels. I don't know what's. I forget what my build is.
I think it's like the baby rollers are the ones that people always use
because why they're quicker.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. There's a couple ideal builds. I don't really play any of them.
Small wheels. You would go slower though because there's. I'm just doing the
math. I think it's maybe for handling.
For
reasons.
Handling.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
Here's one that took a little longer than we thought it would. Stadia is finally, dead. It lasted longer than we thought it would. I think Google realized that they had to put money into it for long enough to make it look like they were attempting to, you know, succeed with it.
This launched November 19th, 2019. So it hasn't even, from release to announcement of death, not even 3 years.
Yep. And it'll go until the end of the year.
We all gave it like a year and a half, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
In terms of guessing, we both undershot. So we... what is it you have to guess without going over? Well, we didn't go over.
We didn't go over. We won with Price is Right rules.
Yeah.
I think I was less optimistic than you on it.
I gave them longer. I guess won, but it doesn't matter at this point. We were both greatly off.
There you go, Ian.
Thanks. I appreciate it. So this is interesting for a couple of reasons. It looks really good in one way and really bad in another. The big announcement of Google Stadia, the big news with them closing it down, is that they are refunding all purchases. All Stadia purchases.
All hardware?
Hardware and games.
That's a chunk of cash.
Anything that you fucking put into Stadia, you're getting back.
Had people known that, they might have given it more of a shot.
Yeah. But the game developer community is getting fucked over. So there have been Stadia, famously Google did some outreach when they were trying to get people to go onto Stadia. It's like what Epic did when they wanted games on the Epic Game Store. Google was offering, from my understanding, pretty nice development packages to developers to try to, you know, get some exclusive games or unique games on the Stadia streaming service. Well, they didn't tell the developers any of this, that any of this was going on, and developers had games that were set to come out in the next weeks and months on the system where they were going to, you know, make back, you know, that, that they no longer have a way to make the money on the, you know, they're losing money. Joe Blackburn, some of the developers at Stadia, created a development platform that empowered us to continue to create and evaluate Destiny 2 from home over the past few years. I'm sure today is rough for a lot of folks. Thanks for helping us make games. Brandon Sheffield of Necrosoft, my good friend, he said, I know everybody is having a great time laughing at this, but Stadia had the best dev revenue of any streaming service, and launching Hyper Gunsport there was going to recoup our dev costs. We were launching there in November, and now we're in a much tougher situation. And then Tom Vian, Tangle Tower was due to launch on Stadia in 2 days' time, and this article was the first I heard about it shutting down. So they definitely fucking dropped the ball in terms of communicating with the people who were truly relying on them.
So, okay, so is this two different things? Obviously, you're going to be out of revenue because the big news, maybe we glossed over this, is that once you hit January 19th, you can't do anything anymore. This is gone. It's wiped from the earth. It's a cloud service. No access to your games you purchase. No access to anything.
I don't believe you can even purchase the games anymore right now.
It's wiped.
Yeah.
So that's the big deal. This is, again, a cloud service. There would be no way to play what you had on your Stadia account after this at all. So there, so obviously devs will be out in the lurch if they were relying on some of the revenue. I have no idea what the base is. I don't think they ever released what the user base is of Stadia, did they? I think Google never released that.
I'm not sure that they did.
Obviously, it's good enough for some of these devs to get some revenue, obviously not big enough to keep it going. So it's tough. July of last year, there's a note saying that, let's see, it might have been 220,000 total active users last year, potentially. 220,000. That to me seems high. Obviously, it's probably been less and less over months, but I would say if you told me that as a high point, maybe 220,000. I think it would maybe be half of that, but okay. So there's that. Then obviously if devs still had agreements for new games coming out, maybe that money is no longer available now for the future. Maybe there was stuff set up for next year. So I think there's two things to look at, loss of revenue here. So obviously Google should have given them a heads up. I don't know how these decisions are made at Google. They obviously famously, there's that, what is it, the Google graveyard?
Yeah. They kill everything.
They kill everything.
Yeah.
It's a fucking gigantic corporation, umbrella company, that owns all this stuff, and it seems like there's haphazard decisions being made. I mean, Frank Cifalo was talking about how weird it was when he did the display when they launched it.
Yeah, they were hired to do a job and they did it, but like Stadia wanted, like the things that they showed off at the Stadia display, the Virtual Boy,
Power Glove, Power ET, Glove, Dreamcast,
ET, and Dreamcast.
It's nothing to do with...
Maybe it wasn't the Virtual Boy. Yeah, Power Glove, ET, and Dreamcast.
Has nothing to do with one another. And Frank in his thread said, like, it went to committee. It was decided upon. Then a week before, it was changed.
You chose to show off three catastrophic failures when announcing your new game streaming platform? It's insanity.
But the point is like, it's that decision sounded like a disaster that went to committee. A decision that, like, in the grand scheme of things, has nothing to do with the success of your console. Imagine how decisions are made when things actually matter. And that's one of the bad things about this. And that's where I do feel for the devs that like, I don't know what's appropriate. We have not been in a situation as ever before.
No.
Where like, cause even a Steam PC lasts forever. PS4, PS5, PS3, you know, those are going to be around for at least 10 years. Those maybe 15.
Right.
Some of the stores. That's a long tail. This is, hey, we're closing up shop. This is a disaster. We're bleeding money. While it's weird because everyone knew this was a disaster. People are affected, but it's a disaster nonetheless. I don't know what the appropriate heads up is on this case. Is it a year? Is it 6 months? They want to close this up as soon as they possibly can.
It's certainly more than this.
Oh, yes. Well, yes. But like, there's not a precedent for a situation like this. There just isn't. So you do feel for some of the devs here.
I absolutely do. I mean, public facing, it's one of those things where they could really have used this as like a, again, like a goodwill moment. But we live in the modern internet age where you're going to hear about all the devs that got fucked up. If this was the magazine era still, you'd just get an article about Google, you know, refunding everyone. Oh, it was a failed situation.
Sure.
But it's, yeah, it's got, you know, consumer facing, it's great. Dev facing, it's awful.
Like, that's the thing. If you announce this even, God, if you announce it a year before, you're killing it earlier because it's going to leak out that it's going away and no one's going to buy anything. This is such a weird situation. This is cloud gaming. It shuts off. It's wiped at some point. That's why this is so weird. Like, I'm trying to think of, what's a scenario where this would work? Like, what's a good heads up? Okay, a year heads up. Great. It gets leaked out the next day from devs. Hey, Google Stadia is shutting down in a year. Then it's dead. Then it's dead even sooner. Like, it keeps rolling back. It's so fucking weird. They should have, but obviously they should have seen the writing on the wall sooner and then said, okay, we got to stop putting in, like, we can't promise devs money on their games if we know this is going to be around. That's what they should have done, at least. Because the server shutting off, that's going to happen eventually. It's just, when is it going to happen?
Right.
I mean, that's just going to happen. So it's a weird situation. I like this snarky tweet here on this PC Gamer article from Adit Doshi. To be fair, Google Stadia would face terrible odds in the past 3 years, having to deal with a global pandemic forcing people to turn to online entertainment, graphics cards and console shortages creating high demand for alternatives. If only they hit the market at a better time. I mean, it was the perfect time for it to come to market. It was, and it just was not going to work.
Nope.
I hope that I feel bad. I feel worst of all for that Google Stadia podcast that came after us here and there.
Oh, yeah.
With their snarky comments at us. I feel bad for them having to move on to another career.
Well, it just reminds me, there was that guy, I think he was the guy behind the Best Buy Canada blog. He was like a big Amico. He had a Stadia tattoo.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did.
No, he did not.
Yes, he does. Google it. Stadia tattoo. He's got it. You'll see it immediately. He got a Stadia fucking tattoo.
Is that an unironic tattoo?
I would assume so, yes. Because he was unironically backing the Amico.
You gotta
be fucking... Yeah, you can see it right there. It's John Scar.
You gotta be fucking kidding me.
Yep. He's got the tattoo.
He got it. What date did he get this? December 13th, 2021. So we knew it was dead. I mean, God, it was dead within a year.
This tattoo's not even a year old?
It says
December 12th, 2021. This tattoo's not even a year old.
Oh my God. My Stadia, I don't want to dunk on him, but holy shit, you are gargling Google's balls for free, for nothing. My Stadia tattoo. Stadia and the community have made an everlasting... There's a Stadia community? Have made an everlasting impact on my life. Never have I been so excited and a firm believer of a platform and the technology. The community is one of the most loving and welcoming, filled with amazing people. Oh my, okay. I'm sure there's some nice people you've met talking about Stadia. I'm just trying to, oh my God.
Never have I felt like really getting a corporate tattoo, but then one for a product that's like guaranteed to fail was failing at that point in time.
I mean, they probably knew it was done within a year. They knew it was done. They probably knew it was done by sometime in 2020.
Yeah, I feel like they did, and they just put enough money into it to keep it trickling along so they can say they tried it.
And save face.
And save face.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, God. I don't want to say freezing cold takes and add him, but oh, my Lord. Are people reporting on this the past couple days,
I'm guessing? Yeah, the tattoo has been brought up. But I knew about it ahead of time.
Oh, we never...
I knew about that.
And this is the same person that did those fluffy blowjob Amico Best Buy articles?
Yes.
I don't understand how some of these people think.
How do you get so attached to all of these failure projects?
I don't understand the mentality. I just don't. It's like they're aliens to me. People like this. They're like aliens. They don't think like us, Ian. I don't. How are they thinking about this stuff?
I don't know, man.
Oh, okay, my head hurts. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Pixel Frames. Great games make for great memories, and with Pixel Frames, those nostalgic moments can decorate a room, your office, or just about anywhere else with these layered shadow boxes.
These shadow boxes provide a unique multi-layer perspective that bring out the character of each scene. Each layer is cut by laser to provide pixel-perfect details, and all frames are officially licensed and bring classic series to the lineup. Use Castlevania, Mega Man, Sonic the Hedgehog, Street Fighter, Double Dragon, Tetris, and even Battletoads. There's going to be more to come.
I got the triple tunnel right here from Battletoads.
Exactly what you want to immortalize about Battletoads.
Exactly. I got the Contra attacking the Red Falcon head there from the last stage. These are great.
Yep, I've got the Shinobi one, and the Sonic ones are great. There's a large selection of the Sonic frames.
These are made for gaming fans, collectors, and home decor enthusiasts. Pixel Frames is sure to add a bit of nostalgia to any space in your life. Visit the new website at pixel-frames.com and pick yourself up some Pixel Frames. Mm-hmm. Ian,
mm-hmm.
We had another Heritage Auctions event recently. It actually ended within the past week. I think it ended around Thursday, Friday, around there. Wait, so don't do the eyebrow thing. It freaks me out. Auctioning off sealed graded games. We talk about this. We get attacked by
people. We talked about this before?
We have talked about this before. Okay. For about 3-4 years, we've talked about this.
It wasn't.
And this is an interesting.
Slipped my mind.
This is an interesting auction because it allows us to look at more of the depressing state that the speculators must be in at this point, because we talked about a month ago about prices dropping 70%, Sonic the Hedgehog dropping over $100,000, and a bunch of others.
Right.
So I have a folder, Ian, that I made.
Yeah, I'm looking for it. Where is it?
It's in the See You Podcast folder. It's called Water Ripoff. It's right there, where you can look at comparisons of some of these game prices. Ian never finds the stuff, but it's
I got it.
Okay. So we can go through a bunch of these. You can just sort by maybe even by name if you want. We'll leave the big one in the middle for the last. You know what the big one is because it's there. So we're going to go through some of these recent events and compare them to the past. Castlevania went for, in April, a 9.4 sealed, went for $72,000. And then it recently...
Another 9.4 A plus.
33.6.
That's September 29th.
That's a Pat Math plunge of about 45%, about nearly 50%.
Wait, what did it go for?
72 versus 33. So it lost.
It's over,
I'm sorry.
50%.
I'm sorry. It's like 50. It's like 57% drop.
Jesus, buddy.
Well, that's why it's Pat.
Get it together.
I wanted to check some NES ones because we didn't talk a huge amount about NES ones last.
Yeah, we've kind of been focusing on the 64 stuff.
How about the Contra one? There's a timeline here for the Contra one here. So we start at the really expensive Contra. A Contra 9.2 A plus sealed went January of last year. This is a long tail. This is a year and a half. 31,200. Then it went for 15,600 in August 5th.
Oh, you missed the April one. April was 21,600.
So it dropped 50% in a year. And then it went for another 50%. It went in August from 30 to about 15, right? Do I have that right? And then it goes for...
10.8 September 29th.
So... the same exact grade,
my plus or minus a couple pluses, but
so it's dropped 2/3, 60 something percent. It's dropped in what is that, a year and a half, something like that.
It's wild.
Do I got that right?
It's bongo bangers. It's wild.
Let's go to Ninja Gaiden. There's three examples.
So
on
here. The really expensive was the original. It was July 9th. 2021,
sister's birthday, 18,600.
18,600.
Then January
28th, 13,800.
And then it keeps dropping to August 5th,
7.2.
So already you have it dropping. That's a drop of 11. That's like 70%. And then from August to September, Ian,
3,120. Another plunge of 50%, more than 50%.
That's a 9.6. It doesn't have the plus. They're going to try to argue. It doesn't matter to me. That plus is not worth it dropping $28,000. $15,000. Three over 18, Ian. What is that? That's about...
I don't fucking know.
God, 15% of the value. It's dropped like 85%, something like that. So it's bad.
It was bad.
I looked up Pokemon.
Bad.
One more Zelda. Zelda 2. I always forget about Zelda 2. The reason I like to look up Zelda 2, Ian, there's a lot more sealed Zelda 2s in Legend of Zeldas.
Sure.
And it's one they reissued more, I believe, later on. So, Zelda 2, 9.6 A plus sealed April 2nd of last year, went for $38,400, a Rev A, not the first release. Oh, it says early production, but I guess I did Rev A sometimes, not when it was early production. I don't care. So $38,400 April 2nd. And then dropped to $10,800 this recent auction, the same exact one.
The same exact one. That was it.
Okay. 9.6 A plus sealed. Same round seal of quality. That's a loss of about 60 something percent. So all of these are getting destroyed. Pokemon Red, I looked up, Ian. Game Boy game was probably the biggest Game Boy one that we've seen, I believe.
Yeah.
Of these, more than the other. For some reason, there's more reds, I think, than blue and yellows that I've seen come up, but whatever. Because red was red the first one that came out? They all came out at the same time.
Red and blue came out at the same time. So we had one in November 20th, 2020 that went for, this was a 9.8 A double plus. I went for 84,000. And then we have, what do we got here? We have a 9.8 A double plus from August 2022, 45,600. So almost 50%, 45,600. So almost a 50% drop off.
It's like 45% drop, a $40,000 loss. If you're there, and it's
yeah, yeah, with something like that, you want to bring up the amount of money, not just the percentage.
And there were other bad Pokemon Reds, but they were like, oh, this is the Rattata versus the Sandshrew one. So people would argue that, well, it's not the same exact one, but there were some bad drops of some of the other ones. It was just hard to line up, you know, versions versus grades.
Mm-hmm.
But they were looking bad. Now we get to the Nintendo 64 stuff. This is the newest console out of all of these that you can talk about. And once we get to the late 90s, it's so much easier to find these sealed games, in my opinion. GoldenEye, like our pal Carl Jobs loves GoldenEye, speedruns it. 9.2 GoldenEye, A plus seal. January of this year went for 31,200. And then August 7th, we didn't think touching this one. The August 7th one, it dropped to 14.4. It dropped over 50%.
Oh, we didn't bring that up.
I think we brought that up last month. That's a bad one.
Yeah.
But what's the worst one?
Mario Kart. So we'll start at the...
You want to start with what it just went for instead? What it just went for?
Sure, let's do that. That's more fun. Okay, 9.6 A+, plus, September 29th, 2022, 31,200.
Well, that's still insane to someone like me.
9.6 A plus plus, so one plus difference, right?
Okay.
April 22nd, 2022, $144,000.
It went from 144 to 31 in what amount of time? 4 months?
However, if you want to, and people will be that way, if you want to, you know, just keep it with one plus, we can also point out that August 5th, 2022, the exact same grade as the one that we just mentioned that sold for 31 went for 48,000. So even if you just leave it to the 9.6 A plus in just under 2 months, it lost $17,000 worth of value.
About a
third. And if you want to include the second A++, people will argue
that.
It, but go for it. 100, I mean, it's just, that's a catastrophic crash to a price.
An A++ plus to an A+, to me, is a very minor difference in a grade. We're talking about, that's a seal quality. It's the same grade on the box. That drops $113,000 in 5 months. That person's going to have to hope that extra plus is really worth it to someone, because someone just only spent $31,000 for just an A plus. So at that point, that's to me close to how bad the Sonic drop was. That's the big loser here.
Yeah.
Of this round. So like we said before, this is not a mere correction. The speculators are going to say this is normal. Things are overpriced, but we have evidence, Ian, that they are not only starting to panic, these speculators.
They're starting to say the quiet parts out loud about this hobby.
Yes. That's the problem. So on Instagram, good old Instagram.
This is the most hilarious shit to me.
I got to log into my Instagram. On a post from who's the post by? From -_worlds, who actually, that's actually a name I recognize from back in the day on a Nintendo Age. It actually is. Actually is.
So basically they're commenting on the sale of the Mario Kart 64, the 9.6 A plus that we just mentioned that ended on September 29th for the $31,200. And this is what they say. This was just silly. I have no other way to put it. This game is rare in near mint copies. There are only 17 copies graded 9.0 or higher in the first print. To compare that to some of the other N64 heavy hitters, Super Smash Bros. Has 35, GoldenEye 28, Super Mario 64 has 28, Ocarina of Time 66, Collector's Edition 66, Ocarina of Time Normal 28. And just like I predicted, they all massively underperformed. At some point, the auction house has to say no. No, they don't. I mean, what kind of delusional headspace are you in where you think the auction house gives a fuck about you and your collectibles? They are in it to make money. They will make the money while they can. If they think that this is going to keep crashing, why wouldn't they just keep selling now? They'd get the higher buyer's premium. This made no sense. Three of the 17 nice copies in one auction and six in the last year and a seventh coming up next month, too. They're upset because this is exposing everything.
Yeah, I got to look at my phone. My browser's not working here. I'm going to go through this. So these speculators who claimed this was all on the up and up, and it was just Ian, it was the free market before acting normally, raising prices, they are bitching at the free market now responding to the dump that this is from the pump, and they're complaining about it. They're complaining. They are
it's the
angry
tweet.
At the auction house.
It's the, ha-ha, I love sewing. Oh, reaping sucks. Yeah, like, yes. Of course. This is, I mean, you can't ask for it both ways.
Yes. They're complaining that these are coming out too often for their liking. That's what they're complaining about. Well, why don't you just buy it then? If you think it's too low, why don't you buy another one then? If you think it's a discount, why don't you put your money in? Because that's not how this works.
This person here is a little bit... heads screwed on a little bit tighter. Fletchro Retro. Yeah, I feel Heritage dropped the ball for their customers on this one. Big fat L here for sure. But I agree with what others are saying. Shit is being dumped. What is, you know, Heritage Auctions going to do with all the dumped inventory? They sell it.
They want to make money.
Yeah, they make money. They do not care about your hurt feelings and the money that you've lost on this.
Unless
they're not. If they really did listen to you and slow down, that would be colluding.
That'd be more colluding, which we think might be happening already. Remember, we haven't had a
You can't do that. You can't, like, manipulate the... You can't.
We still haven't had a Super Mario 64 in a high-grade B auction all this year.
Yeah.
A 9.6 or a 9.8. So that's weird in of itself. I'm going to go in order here, Ian, best I can. VVG Club. Or people need to realize that we are in a bear market and the speculators have left the scene. Time to hold rare games for a bit and not sell. VVG Club is Eric Nierman, the dentist that we speak about. You are one of the speculators. Yes. That's why you got into this. That's why you raised $1 million with your friends and pals to buy this shit. Because you thought it was going to go to the moon.
Yeah.
You're the people that are now worried about this. The collectors who actually cared about this stuff, they would welcome these prices going down. They wouldn't be bitching about them on Instagram.
Yeah.
And then Minus World responded to him saying, sarcastically, great point, but don't worry, bud. We have another 9.6 A-plus coming up next month. They realized that, oh, no, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We're in trouble. The dentist says, people need to recognize that although these games are awesome and rare, the hundreds of speculators that were bidding on these just to make money are gone. We are back to the hundreds of rare games being bid on by the hundreds of existing collectors left. I don't know how that math works out. Rarity only begets high prices when the supply outweighs the demand. We aren't there quite yet, but we will soon. I mean, that's just to basically say that we're in trouble because the speculators are losing their asses and they're trying to get out. That's what it is. But if it wasn't for the speculators, Eric, you wouldn't have an equity gain on most of the shit you're holding. They don't want to recognize that. You can't blame speculators for getting out or people that are scared when that's the reason the price is inflated ridiculously in the first place. On them. Like it's to see the logic these people try to maintain is nuts.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, basically, when they see it collapsing, they start talking like it's just it's an asset.
The market is extremely. This is from someone named Carl. The market is extremely soft to boot right now. You got to keep that in mind. Recession and bad economy, and it's only going to get worse, I'm afraid. Still, an N64 game getting 20K isn't anything to scoff at over unless you overpaid from Heritage in 2021. Pretty decent points there. I will say, though, that a bunch of fake money getting pumped into the economy the past couple of years is one of the reasons why a lot of these collectibles went up. Not sure. Just this, Pokemon cards, yeah. NFTs, and crypto.
Absolutely.
That's part of the ride. Green Hair Game says, in principle, I agree that three of these Mario 64, card 64s, should not be stacked on top of each other. In this specific instance, I do not think that this is the worst example of an undercopy. Or two performing
I do
poorly.
Not understand these new terms.
They're trying to make new turns up. I can remember much crazier examples where a second lower graded copy bombed and the higher graded first. Yeah. People talk about fluctuations happening before. This is not a fluctuation. When these prices are dropping 50 to 70%, that's not a fluctuation. A fluctuation to me would be something dropping 15, 20%, coming back over that amount and like regressing to a mean. That's a fluctuation. When stuff is dropping 70% or more, that's not a fluctuation. Unless you told me these prices are going to come back in the next couple months, it's not a fluctuation. Joan Bone, that's another OG or collector from Nintendo Age, I recognize. There's a lot of people who want out of video games, it seems. Poor placement, but if people are lining up to dump, then you can't blame the auction house for taking them on. Having said that, probably the worst placement of significant titles I've seen thus far. So Joan Bone makes a great point. I don't understand why the placement would matter. If this stuff is coveted, who cares?
Right.
You're just basically shining a light in the fact that there's not a huge amount of people that are buying these. If they have to be spaced out that much.
If they have to be spaced out and you're losing money like that, there's not a whole lot going on. If it was truly worth what it says it is, it would sell for that price.
Minus Rolls responded, I do see your point, but it's also in the auction house's best interest to say no to something like this. What? They get less of a cut across three big auctions and end up with disappointed sellers. But you have happier people buying it if it's all about the collecting them. Like, and they get a bunch of each. So the gambit that someone like Miners was thinking is that don't put out these games, pretend nothing's happening, and then 6 months or a year from now, you're going to get a larger return. Heritage Auctions doesn't fucking care. They want their money now because they've seen probably markets like this before come and go.
Yes, and Heritage Auctions isn't a small mom-and-pop business. It's just a pipeline of cash.
Jim Jupiter with one of the best responses in this thread. Responding to Minus Worlds, but why? I guess why hold things off? It was hyperinflated for 3 years thanks to WADA/Heritage and resellers looking to maximize profits. So now things are slowly going back to normal, making the hobby, in quotes, actually a hobby again and more affordable too. That's what we were saying. If you really cared about it as a hobby, you wouldn't care about these prices crashing. You can buy more of them,
right?
At lower risk.
And shouldn't that be what you want to do if you're in? If you're so certain that the value is going to go back up.
Jim Jupiter is repeating stuff we says. Well, this is not my alt account. I don't think these games are worth five and six figures, judging from the decreasing prices. After the comic dealers and Rally Otis pulled out, and after everything of value was flipped several times and ran out of next greater fool buyers, crypto is down, and the IT magnates can't buy all those Marios. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what's happening. Fresh blood came in, like we said.
There's no one left to throw ridiculous amounts of money at it. So we're starting to see what people might consider this.
Sure.
The value, what value they might consider this at. Like, this is the prices we're getting now.
Sure. Just talk more about hyperinflation. Jim Jupiter, very smart, knows what they're talking about the things in this thread. And of course, he's getting pawed. Like, oh, if you don't, you just say you don't care about video games, man. It's like, dude, relax. We know you're on the hook for a lot of monies.
Yeah, what was the thing? Going back to it, the initial comment, this is just so silly, blah, blah, blah. This game is rare in near mint copies. There are only 17 copies graded 9.0 or higher. Well, sure, but that doesn't mean that they have to be worth a set amount.
Correct.
Like, what does that mean? That doesn't mean anything.
And that doesn't count the copies that aren't graded.
Right.
That doesn't count the ones that haven't been graded yet or the ones that WADA are sitting on or CGC.
You almost see the light switch turning on, yes, and being like, oh, I overpaid.
Sure.
Just because that's what you paid for, it doesn't mean that's what it's going to be worth forever.
Sure.
Doesn't matter if there's only 19. If no one cares about it, if no one ends up caring about it, then the price is going to keep going down.
Someone named Fletro Retro said, "I feel Heritage dropped the ball for their customers on this one."
Big fat L.
Oh, that's one you brought up?
Yeah. But it gets better.
The customers are the people buying.
Yes.
As well. Like, it's both. It's not just the sellers. It's people buying
them. The second half of their comment, though, is fairly... That's the one I brought up. It's fairly reasonable.
Big fat L to you, because you're right. You have a bunch of equity tied up that's losing money week by week. There's a few more here. I wish the freaking browser worked on this. Gamer Collector 2 said, "Sorry, but I'm not sure I understand your logic. Say no to what? If there's no reserve, they can't say no. It's sold based on bids. They have to sell it for whatever price it ends up as if there's no reserve. Seems people just aren't into buying the big hype anymore." Great. Thank you, Gamer Collector 2.
The hype is gone. Too bad. You can't demand the hype to come back.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. It's actually, they're just, like you said, they're exposing themselves public like this. You see the infighting, and they're blaming an auction house. Yep. They're blaming an auction house who helped them get to the point they were at the past few years with these prices. It's insane.
Yeah.
So there you go. And it's just going to get, in my opinion, worse and worse.
Yep.
I don't think they're coming back. I'm trying to think, Ian, of a market where it was obviously a pump and dump or some sort of like glorified greater fool theory, or once it just deflated like Beanie Babies, it eventually came back to the same heights afterwards. I'm trying to think, was there everything, something like that? I guess you can say sports cards now.
Some sports cards, yes. That's what I was going to say.
It's an entirely different generation and it's different cards. It's not the same cards that are being bought and sold.
Correct. And even even up to right before the pandemic, Vonnie's business was selling boxes of these old cards for $5-$10. Like,
sure.
My friends were buying them and they were opening them. And you could occasionally find like a decent card or something in there, but this shit was worthless until the pandemic hit again.
Sure.
So, I think sports cards have been kind of on the rise again, over the past decade, but it was really the pandemic again that, injected a lot of cash into it.
And then it's the newer stuff. It's the chase cards of the new stuff versus right. Are people going out and buying 1991 pro set football cards?
No, there's very, very little in the old sets that people are looking for right now.
It's yes. So
some
so,
things, but very little.
So I mean like stuff that like in its time and place, like Pogs from the 90s. Once that was gone, will that ever come back? Beanie Babies never came back. That's what I mean. So like
even the overpumped comics markets like the 90s, like that stuff never really just magically became worth anything.
Oh no, they're worthless.
Yeah.
I'll look up good point. I'll look up like Rye number 3 right now. That was one of those ones that was like tough to find from Valiant that my cousin put on his wall. Put on his wall to brag to me about it. Rye number 3 and 4, the rare ones that were low print run that were probably worth hundreds then. Buy it now, both for $27. Stuff like that. He would. I'm not gonna get on my cousin, but he would make fun of me for wanting to buy this stuff from the 60s and 70s and stuff that was like actually people liked for one period of time. Oh, this is the stuff. It's Rye 3 and 4. It's a hot comic now. These they didn't make a lot of because no one cared about Rye.
No one gives a shit. I don't even know who Rye is.
You know who Rye is?
No.
Okay. Rye was one of the big Valiant like samurai guys. For there. But okay. Anyway.
Yeah, I see him.
A little red dot on his chest. There's a couple different versions. Anyway. So I guess we're going to see more infighting in the future, Ian. And I wonder, this is going to be the fun part. This is where it's really going to get juicy. When they figure out one of their own starts to dump all their stuff.
Oh, yeah.
When they figure out there's someone, because it's going to get to the point where one of them's going to be like, hey, I don't want to keep losing equity. I got to get out now. They're going to know who's selling what. And they're all going to turn against each other.
There's going to be someone in that group that is the least financially set. And then they're going to start to look at this as an albatross and they've got to fucking sell it off.
Yes. But they're going to pump. They're not going to tell anyone, though.
No.
Because these are all people that care about money.
But people will find out.
Yes. Money is what drives this. Again. So people are going to find out and it's going to be fireworks. So maybe we'll just sneak in some Instagram conversation in the future. Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
Ian, we got a Patreon, don't we?
Patreon.com/CEPodcast. You go. I'll take a look at what we offer you. We offer you stuff. You get the full video podcast. You get pretty much weekly writings, hangouts. We got to schedule our hangout this month. You can get access to the bonus bits. We have a pin club.
Pin club.
So much. So much you can
so
do.
So much fun.
At the CU Podcast Patreon. So check it out and give us some support. So
here's the Patreon poll that you voted on this week. In second place, is grading or reselling worse for video game collecting? 29%. In first place, what could modern games learn from classic / retro games? Ian, what could the modern games in general learn from the games of yesteryear?
So my problem with modern games, big modern games, is they feel...
What type of games?
Huh? Big. they feel incredibly bloated to me. There's always, you know, very lengthy hand-holding, you know, tutorials. I feel like a lot of the side quest stuff is just padding. You know, you're doing the same shit over and over again. I really prefer a leaner, meaner game. Now, some of this is preference, clearly. There are some people who love open world games, and I get it. I can't focus on them. But I do think something could be said about streamlining the tutorial process. There's got to be something between the, you know, 8-bit fucking figure it out and this, you know, modern PlayStation 5 era stuff, you know, PS4 era, where, you know, your tutorials are taking an hour to an hour and a half.
An hour and a half tutorial?
For some games, yeah.
What?
Like, I was playing...
How much time do they think adults have?
Like, I was playing Dying Light on the PS4, you know, a while back, and it was just, like, it was a slog. It was a slog. I never got past the tutorial because I wanted to fucking play. And it's like, go do this and talk to this character. Now go do this and talk to this character. And, like, each time you do something, they're, like, introducing, like, a little new mechanic. It's like...
Why don't you just do it naturally? In the game design of the levels.
I mean, I guess it was supposed to feel natural, but, like, I just... Too many of them drag you through every single aspect of the game when it's like, how about you just teach me about this when I approach it? Actually, there's a lot of JRPGs that are good about that, where they'll just give you the basics up front, and then, like, as you get into more advanced mechanics, they'll be like, okay, now here's another little tutorial instead of trying to do it all at
once. As you get to it.
Yeah. But I would also like more linear games. I don't play a lot of AAA stuff because I don't love... open world games. I feel like, you know, it's the old saying, it's a mile wide pool, but it's a fucking inch deep. I would rather have more focus on, like, a clean focus single player game. I haven't played it yet, and I should, but the God of War game is actually the recent, like, reboot, the reboot of God of War. There was a lot of people who were like, oh, this game's like linear, it's not open world, and that was strange to them. And for me, I think that's good. I think there is plenty of room.
Were any of them open world?
No.
God of War? Okay,
no.
That's what I thought.
There's plenty of room for focused single player games alongside open world stuff. And I wish there was just a little bit more variety like there used to be.
When do you think that turned? When did that change where, like, you seem like the AAA game was leaning more.
I think Xbox One, PlayStation 4 really when it happened.
Past several years.
You started seeing that happening in the 360 PS3 era. I think that's Gen 7. But it was by the time PS4 and Xbox One were the current systems, that's really when everything just seemed to kind of go to open world.
Was it, you think that was in part due to, like, the success of, like, GTA 5 and, like, Red Dead 2?
Oh, absolutely. The success of Grand Theft Auto 3 on the PlayStation 2 was, like, I mean, from that point on, you could see people trying to work every game into an open world framework.
Or even back then, 20 years ago?
Yeah, or even if it's a more linear game or a more straightforward game, like Yakuza is not nearly as, like, big of in scope as something like Grand Theft Auto, but it was still, you know, you walk around a town and there's little things you can see, and, like, that's fine, but I don't think every game needs to do that. Just like when RPGs got big in the PlayStation era, every game started to try adding, like, little RPG elements to it. You don't need that in every game. Everything starts to feel the fucking same.
I think that's maybe their it's their ploy, some of these devs, where it's like, wow, we make this open world, that automatically means there's a lot more content for people to buy, and that's not always the case.
No, especially because, like, people don't, not everyone engages with all the content. Like, so if you put way too much time into something that no one's touching, the game still feels half-baked.
Like, if this Sonic game comes out that's open world, but you have, like, very little justification for running around besides running around, I mean, is that better than a traditional linear Sonic game?
Sure.
Like, that's the question. Something like Zelda, at least, was inherently open world, so it made sense for them to have open world games. That's how they are. But for some of these properties, it might not make sense. And why not just tell a good story?
Right.
Is that become more difficult, maybe, just to tell a good story? Are we not valuing writers as much to, like, have a coherent, cogent story with, like, nice characters that have, like, arcs to them and, like, dramatic tensions that happen? Like, is that something we're, like, shying away from? Or no? I don't know. I don't play enough of this stuff to know. Like, if there's a big difference in the triple A open world versus a linear game like this. I don't know. But that's a good point. I was going to talk about tutorials versus getting your feet wet on game mechanics.
Sure.
I was going to talk about that. Famously, the first stage of Super Mario Brothers is like a masterclass in design because it introduces things to you in a very, very set way as you go through. You get the one Goomba at first.
Oh yeah.
You get a block, then you get a mushroom. You realize you can't hit a brick first until you get a mushroom. It's set out in such a way that it logically makes sense.
It teaches you everything. Yeah.
It teaches you as you go. You get the star later when you have more enemies in a row coming, and that's where the star shows up. It really holds your hand for that first stage.
It doesn't, though. You never know that you're playing a tutorial.
No, but looking back, it's really holding.
Sure, I just, when I say hand holding, I mean something completely different, I guess.
Okay, I mean, like, it doesn't throw you to the wolves that first stage.
No,
like when you're 4 years old.
No, absolutely, it doesn't.
You can beat that first stage.
Hand holding, I just mean like over the top, heavy handed tutorials, like press A, do this.
Oh, okay,
like,
I see.
Yeah,
go to here and talk to this person, and this is what happens.
Right.
Obviously, what you can also learn from retro games is that, going a little bit to the point, shorter might be better. Brevity could be great.
That was something I wanted to say too. Rein some of this shit in. I don't need a 100-hour game.
Yes.
And you'll keep your budget smaller too.
I mean, obviously, looking back in the 80s, you started from the arcade experience where you were lucky to play for more than 5 minutes mm-hmm. before you lost your quarter. And then NES games are anywhere from 15, 20 minutes to a couple hours. You know, Legend of Zelda, you can beat in a couple hours if you're good at it. So you had this little range. And then it exploded sometime, you know, once you got, past into the 90s. The game length in general started going up on this stuff, where you got to, like, 9 hours, 10 hours, 20 hours. Maybe that was also the rise of, like, JRPGs. But even, I don't think those were probably as bad as the games. I mean, like,
no, like, if I had to get, I think, like, Final Fantasy VI, probably 35, 40 hours.
So that's where it kind of exploded.
Yeah, but even that's, like, smaller than what they are now. Like, every RPG these days is, like, you know, has to be a 50-hour fucking masterpiece.
Well, you said 35 is still pretty long.
It is, but it's shorter than what I'm saying. It's shorter than what came after.
Really, 35 hours of Final Fantasy VII?
No, not 7. 6.
Okay, 6.
Yeah,
okay.
Final Fantasy VII, I think, took me about 45, 50 my first time through.
So that, to me, would be, like, my cutoff, personally, for, like, what's a reasonable time I want to put into a game, just based upon what I have going on. Obviously, there's people that gaming is their main hobby and only hobby, so I get that. I'm not trying to put that down. But if you tell me, like, it's going to take you 200 hours to get through this game or 250, I will never play that game.
No.
I wouldn't know where to start. I wouldn't know what I'm comfortable stopping. Then I would think to myself, Ian, well, Ian, I put 75 hours into this game. Was that a fucking waste of time? Since I never have more time to get into it, I wouldn't bother to start it. I would be afraid to, personally. That's the thing about brevity. Do you think controls can be simplified at all at this point, or is it too late to sort of, like, try to simplify any control scheme?
I think that just depends on the game. I find, like, a lot of games, you know, aren't using all of the buttons on a controller. I think that's really just, I think there are games that call for complex controls and there are games that don't. And I feel like developers, good game developers, if it's a good game, whether anyone, you know, outright calls it out or not, it's partially due to good controls.
Sure.
I guess what I'm saying is I because of how complex some games have gotten, you can't just go back to, obviously, like, a D-pad and two buttons. There are some games that have worse controls, but I don't think that's necessarily something you learn from the past and bring to the present.
Sure, it's tough. I mean, going back to something like Breath of the Wild, that's a pretty complex control scheme, especially compared to, you know, the Zelda games of yesteryear.
Sure.
It uses almost every single button on the Switch.
Yeah, but I mean that's evolution. I don't think there's a whole lot of, you know, yeah, I just don't think there's a whole lot of simplification you can do.
You can't, because you have to, like, draw back the bow and aim, and then you're jumping around.
You can get developers that are really good at their controls, and you can refine them, but I don't think you can really oversimplify these controls these days.
No, you can't do that. Obviously, we talk about this every year. I would love for real manuals to make a return. I think they're just nice to have a manual. I think it's nice to be able to read something separately outside the game. I don't want to have to learn about the game by turning it on.
Oh, I bring this up anytime something comes in. I would love the return of manuals.
Give me 8 pages. Can you give me 8 pages? Control, story, controls, basic layout, modes. Give me 8 to 10 pages. You don't need a 50-page manual. Give me 10 pages. I think that'd be nice. I think it'd be nice. I can study while I'm eating food or watching something. So I'm,
look how nice.
Because I think there's something to be said for learning a little bit more about a game versus over a period of time versus being forced to fucking swallow all the information at once. Maybe that's what it is too.
Yeah.
I gotta learn by learning. I gotta turn on the game and play it to learn about it, and then play it. It's like fucking cramming for a test.
Let me read a manual on the ride home while taking a shit.
Yes, thank you. I would be reading again. Have a stack of manuals next to the toilet, and there you go. We sound like old men. We liked to read. I read the manual front to back before I played every NES game I ever
Print had. Reference guides cannot be beaten by a phone or the internet. You need to be able to flip pages and look back and forth. It's quicker. It's better.
Physical books have not died
out. No loading.
Physical books have not died out for a reason.
Yeah, no read, no ads.
No ads.
No ads.
There might be an ad in the manual just for like, hey, buy WrestleMania coming out also from Acclaim.
But it's not like half my fucking phone screen is trying to find one location.
You're not turning the page in a fucking pop-up and no pop-up ads in print. That's the good news.
Yes.
No pop-up ads in certain guidebooks at all. So, all right. Well, I mean, I think that's there's something to be said for that. The controls thing, I would love to... The control things might just be going back to making sure that the experience is simplified. Just because you have a next-gen system doesn't mean the entire experience has to be next-gen. You can still – it's like something like Untitled Goose Game, for example. It's still a pretty simple game, right?
Oh, yeah. Very simple.
It's just clever.
Yep.
So you don't always have to use everything available to you to make a good modern game. Maybe that's what – you know. Maybe that's what the lesson is. You zoned out on me?
I'm fucking hot.
You're hot? I have it on level 2, the fan.
Yeah, it's not your fault. I'm a roasty, toasty boy.
You're roasting like that Costco chicken.
Yeah, I'm roasting like that fucking linebacker chicken
on fucking chicken growth hormones, CGH.
Chicken roids.
This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by True Classic. Finding the perfect fitting t-shirt can get frustrating. It can be too tight around your gut or just big and boxy. True Classic wants to make it easy to look good and feel good. So their high quality and pocket friendly menswear is made with every man in mind. It's a True Classic way. So guys, no excuses. It's time to upgrade. In fact, over 2 million men already have, and they look really good. We have an exclusive deal for our audience to hook you up with some True Classic. For a limited time, get 25% off with the code CUPODCAST at trueclassic.com.
Almost all men's t-shirts are designed to look good on a certain body type. Think skinny models with six-packs. Most of us aren't packing anything down but a few beers. That's okay. Guys, it's simple. You're wearing the wrong clothes. True Classic tees taper off towards the bottom, but they fit tighter around the chest and shoulders. You can wear a True Classic with confidence. They are tailor-made to highlight your best assets. Not only are you finally getting a t-shirt designed for your body, but the first thing you'll notice is how soft it is. These are super soft. I really enjoy how these feel on me. Get ready to clean out your closet. You won't be able to go back to those cheap materials once you try these. True Classic doesn't just stop at tees. They're your one-stop shop for all sorts of men's essentials, from polos and workout shirts to comfortable boxers. All of the gear is top-notch quality and at reasonable prices. They have a great pack builder on their website where you can custom bundle all of their essential products and save even more than the discount we're offering you today. And for any of the big boys out there, they have long body options for the tall guys and have triple XL on all of their staple colors. True Classic will make you feel your best, whether you have abs or flabs. Their clothes look great on all body types. Skinny dudes, big dudes, buff dudes, True Classic has you covered.
It's time to get comfortable and get going. Upgrade your wardrobe with True Classic. Get 25% off at trueclassic.com with code CUPODCAST. Free shipping is included on purchases over $100. 100% risk-free guarantee with a 30-day return policy. Stay classy with True Classic. All right. We got voicemails. You go to anchor.fm/CUPODCAST. Leave us a voice message. We will appreciate it. If you leave it to under about 20 seconds, I will love you a lot. It would be very fantastic for that to happen. Here's the first one.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Greg calling in from St. Petersburg, Florida. Greg? And I was just wondering if Tommy Tallarico or Phil Adams offered to come on the show, if you would take them up on it. Hope you guys have a good one, and thanks for the content.
Like a one-on-one, or just like, hey, just like call in Tommy and talk about what a disaster is. First of all, it wouldn't happen because we would be critical. So like, that's why it would never happen.
Yeah, at this point, if it was like, and it never would be is the problem, but if it was in good faith, mm-hmm. maybe. But the reason why we never had them on earlier, and we could have, is because we did not want to be used as a vehicle for him to just talk over people and talk about how great and everything was in Amico Land.
It's okay. You can't have someone on to promote something that is years away and then say, oh, this is going to be great. And then if we ask critical questions, well, we're too far out for that. Like, that's what would have happened. Yeah. Like, it would have been, well, you guys don't have the information. So we'd have to, like, first of all, trust the person's being truthful. When we know the person is a pathological liar. We knew that years ago, but we know that for sure now. Everyone knows that. So there would be a no win for us to interview someone while it was happening. Plus, because we always come from the consumer side anyway.
Right.
We always look at what is being presented to the consumer.
And it wasn't our responsibility to let Tommy correct things or clear the air. As I said numerous times during the earlier to mid portions of the Amico stuff, if Tommy wants us to stop saying things that are wrong, then Tommy's got to make sure the information that's getting out there is not wrong.
I remember earlier on,
everything we said came from publicly available interviews with him, publicly available media, stuff that he was saying out in the public. So if he had a problem with that, the problem was not us. The problem was he never got, he said way too fucking much and then blamed it on us when his words came back to haunt him. They never, ever, ever should have had him as the mouthpiece of this thing.
You know what people don't talk about that was very important, I believe, early on that I pointed out? Just how amateurish and how unprofessional the website was early on before they revamped it. I can guarantee you Tommy did the website himself.
Oh, absolutely.
And so when he came at me on Twitter, we're talking like 2019, he would come after me and be like, hey, Pat, you know, like that stuff, what you're saying, you don't have the information. I said, Tommy, I went to your website. What you're saying on Twitter right now is not on the website. That was the 1.0 website.
Right.
The shitty website that I think embarrassed him because he never came back to me to say it was a nice website, because the website looked like it was designed 20 years ago. Very important, because then I realized that he doesn't have a team helping him communicate, and he doesn't have even someone working on the fucking website for this huge venture.
I know. We got to move on.
Hey guys, Pat from Cape May, New Jersey.
Jersey and Pat!
I just wanted to give my condolences to Ian and, well, really the rest of Buffalo and all of New York, really, on the loss of Every Time I Die, a.k.a. the best band on the planet. If you don't know who Every Time I Die is, they describe their music sound as a cross between a high school kegger and a Buffalo Bills tailgating party. love the show. Keep it up.
I do know of Every Time I Die. I don't know what you mean the loss of, though. Did they move? Did they break up? I have not kept up on Buffalo in the ways I should have.
Hey, Ian and Pat. Joel from Australia. It's been a while. I was just curious if you've seen the skate still working on its trailer that EA released back in July. I'm just after your thoughts. It's getting a lot of big, big praise saying that it's genuine and honest and straightforward. But as a software engineer, I know what it's like when somebody tries to sell something that you're still working on and how much pain that can cause in the long run. I was just wondering what your guys thought and how games are now trending towards showing games way too early just to drum up hype. Thank you.
Yeah, I haven't seen that trailer. I did enjoy the first two skate games. I'd probably play a new one. So I can't comment on the trailer, but I we've talked, I mean, a perfect recent example of people have got to stop showing games too early is the Sonic Frontiers thing. Like, once the trailer, like the actual trailer came out with like more gameplay and stuff like that, like the officially produced trailer, the game looked pretty good. There was zero fucking reason for Sega and IGN to do that, like, week-long fucking, you know, info dump of them playing, like, the early builds that looked like shit. It did far more harm than good. And while we never saw anything other than just the words come up for Metroid Prime 4, that's another example. Like, and Nintendo, you know, I think is learning from their mistakes. I think Nintendo's actually been the best about it as far as a modern company has been, in that they really don't show too much of anything anymore until the games, maybe at latest, like if it's a big game like Zelda, sure, they'll tease it. But I think most times they show stuff for games that are coming out in 6 months.
Yeah. Or sometimes sooner. Odyssey was like 3 months.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Donald from Minneapolis. Hey, you guys were recently talking about Action 52, which made me rewatch the Nerd episode. And he talked about how the suggested retail price was $200.
It's on the box.
So I have to wonder, did any store actually sell this for $200? I can't imagine Toys R Us would stock any Nintendo game for that price. Did anybody ever actually pay $200 for this game?
I thought it was $299.
Thanks.
Let me find the box. That's a good question. The problem with Action 52 is that it's such a weird suggested retail is $199.99.
Oh, okay.
It's such a weird story in general. How, you know, you had college kids make it for almost nothing. You had this guy put this together. I would think the $199 was almost a way to sell it by saying, hey, the suggested retail is $199.
But we can sell it for $100.
I'm going to wholesale it to you for like $40 or whatever.
Yeah.
Or $50. And you sell, like I said, for $100. I think there's something to be said for that, because obviously no one, $200 in 1991? Or so, no one, $200 is a ton of money back then. That's what a game console cost.
Yeah.
So you'd have a lot of pissed off people. I don't know. I have
$434 today.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling that this probably was peddled around Florida.
I think it was mostly probably sold out of mom and pop shops.
And or maybe it was a consignment thing. I don't know anything about this in terms of how this was sold. We're talking, you know, they did not make many of these at all. They probably made, God, did they make even a couple of thousand of these? You know, who knows? That's a good story. I'd love to know. Like, I know they interviewed a couple of people that worked on the games who, you know, these, they were college kids now, just about our teenagers. Now they're our age that worked on the game, basically. I'd love to know the story about that. Maybe someone point me into an article that came up. I never saw that.
Hey guys, Justin here from Hermosa Beach. Love you guys. Just watched your top 25 SNES games reviews. And I know, obviously, everybody has their own opinions, but it'd be kind of fun to see you two rattle off your top 25 SNES games as fast as you can. No ranking involved. Just what comes right off the top of your head that you can throw out there.
Okay. God, ActRaiser, NBA Hang Time, Super Mario World.
Uniracers, Tiny Toons. It's not a system.
Tecmo Super Bowl. it's tough to put me on the spot.
Super Mario World.
Chrono Trigger. Super Mario Kart. There you go.
Final Fantasy 3. Yeah.
There you go. I like Time Tracks because it's based on Time Tracks. That's one of my favorite ones. We're missing out a lot. Get a certain Super Nintendo guidebook over my right shoulder to learn more about that library there.
Hey guys, love the show. You always said that nostalgia kicks in between the ages of 35 to 45.
Oh, no, earlier. Oh, no. We said it was earlier. Oh, much earlier, in your 20s, it kicks in. That's when it kicked in for me.
What does?
Nostalgia.
Oh, yeah, I would say you're early. I would say I started to feel it in my late teens, because that's why I started buying NES games.
Like, oh, no, yeah. For me, I would say, honestly, I'd say between, in general, around 20 to 25 is, like, I think when most people probably feel it. For me, it was, it was like the late teens.
Between the ages of 35 to 45-ish. And we saw that 10 years ago with the huge 80s comeback. We're starting to see that now with the 90s. You have Rugrats being remade, Fresh Prince, Full House, etc. is it fair to say that, you know, when today's coming of age group becomes 35 to 45, we're going to see, you know, 2021 stuff picking up?
Yes. Here's the problem. Yes. But pop culture has become so much more fragmented over the last 10, 20 years, like especially 10 years. I don't, if you told me 15, 20 years from now, what would be nostalgic? You'd be taking like a couple of Netflix shows like Stranger Things, which takes place in the 80s. And then you'd be taking,
nostalgic for a nostalgia show.
Like, I'm really starting to think like in the 80s and even 90s, everyone was watching and listening to this almost the same things because you had less options. And now there's so many options where, like I said, I don't know if there's going to be a coherent, like, what was the big pop culture thing in 2022? I don't know. Obviously, I'm not a kid. I'm not around it, but I don't know if it's going to be the same thing.
I think things like Game of Thrones and stuff will get that. I think from a collecting standpoint, though, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, a lot of this nostalgia, it goes hand in hand with collecting. Mm-hmm. And we are now in a time where the majority of the things that people are into that we were into, there was more physical stuff back then. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see what collecting looks like for people who are growing up now. How are they going to reclaim that nostalgia like people now do by buying Nintendo games or Super Nintendo games when there's no object? Are they going to load up a special drive with all of their... I mean, honestly, it'll probably be a neater, tidier existence, but I'm just trying to figure out, like, what are they going to glom onto? What is the hobby actually going to look like?
Oh, I mean, we already said there's not going to be a video game collecting hobby.
Sure. Really.
20 years from now, I don't think there's going to be one.
Everyone's going to have a fucking ROM dump.
The ROM dump. Hey, look how nice how nicely organized my list is.
Yeah.
You like my GUI, my graphical user interface, like my front end, Ian? Well, that sounds kind of dirty. Next.
Hey, guys. Zach from Ohio here. I got a scenario for you. You're given the chance to swap the soundtracks from two different games. The gameplay stays the same, but each game now has a soundtrack of the other. What two soundtracks would you change and why?
I couldn't begin to try to answer this question. I can't like wrap it around my head.
Put a Symphony of the Night soundtrack on Sonic the Hedgehog 2 and Sonic the Hedgehog 2 soundtrack in Symphony of the Night.
I'll put Russian Attack on... I'm looking at Bonk's Adventure. I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Hey, Pat, it's Sean calling from Dublin, Ireland.
Hey.
If you had to pick a golden age, silver age, and bronze age of video gaming, how would you go about it? Would you start the golden age, you know, in the time of the Odyssey and the Commodore 64, or during the NES when popularity started to pick up after the crash? It'd be interesting to know your guys' take on this. Thanks.
I've thought about this.
I think the golden age would probably be 16-bit.
I think you have to have a platinum. You need a platinum, gold, silver, bronze, and modern. Just like comics. Platinum is like pre-superhero stuff, for example. Platinum, sure. Platinum to me would be everything pre-Atari, probably.
Yeah, sure.
Atari's the start of golden age to me.
So gold. Okay, yeah. Right.
Golden age would be Atari. Ooh, you make the case that it could be Atari all the way through all the 8-bit. You can make that case. If not, it'll be up until the NES. NES would be silver up until...
I would put it through the 8-bit stuff, I think.
What, golden?
Yeah.
Okay, so you do up to like the late 80s. Okay, I can review that. So like 10 years.
Yes.
Late 70s to late 80s. Then silver would be starting with TurboGrafx, Genesis, Super Nintendo, going into, I guess until the Dreamcast.
Yes, I was going to say Dreamcast would be a good cutoff.
And then bronze would be
up to PS
PS2, OG Xbox.
I would say go all the way up to 360.
That almost another 10 years almost.
I would say yeah, go up to 360 PS3 and then you start modern with PS4 and Xbox One.
Okay. There you go. We just did it.
I think style of gameplay there's good changes in the style and focus of games between each of those periods too.
I can make an argument that NES would be part of silver.
Right, yeah, I you could go either way.
This is a big jump up.
Otherwise, gold is just a very small...
Yeah, sure.
It's a small era.
Hey, Pat and Ian, love the podcast. You guys are my number one work podcast to listen to. Just a quick question here. I know in the past, Ian has mentioned that he's delved a little bit with the medical marijuana, maybe a little bit recreational.
A little bit.
I'm just kind of curious, do you still do that, Ian? Is that still part of your life? And also a question for the good old Catholic boy Stan over there. Has he ever delved into some of the devil's lettuce or some?
I was an altar boy. I was going to say, why am I the good Catholic boy? I haven't practiced Catholicism since probably early high school.
I was one point in time, I was an altar boy.
Did you get the Six Flags trip at the end? That's what the altar boys got, a trip to Six Flags.
No, I fucking hated being an altar boy.
Then why'd you do it?
That was the end. That was the end of my church.
How old was he an altar boy?
Probably, I had blue hair at one point in time. And I dyed my hair blue for the first time in seventh grade, so I was probably 12.
That's when you stopped?
That was when I stopped, yeah.
Did you stop? Did they say anything about your blue hair? Did you go to Catholic school?
I did until fourth grade.
Okay.
Went through fourth grade Catholic school. No, I mean, they you know, to his credit, Father Pat was pretty cool, and he didn't care about my hair.
So I've only smoked THC twice, once kind of tricked. We talked
about, I still don't think there was THC in there.
I was high, Ian.
Yeah, well,
I was like sitting down, like,
you're
woo!
A welterweight, so maybe it was something else.
It wasn't CBD, because I've had CBD before. And then a girl gave me a joint. That was, I think, a condition to have sex. I looked at it like, well, I really don't want to, but this is pretty much a condition, so I feel peer pressured like I'm in high school. So that's why I did it. I didn't really feel anything when I smoked it. Maybe take it a few times. I didn't feel anything.
You generally have to, especially if it's not like really great stuff, you got to smoke a couple of times before
it kicks in.
It gets into your body. Yeah. I smoke every day. I am high. I'm high now.
Oh.
I take edibles in the morning because they help my back. I'll be high in the afternoon, and I'll probably be high at night.
Okay.
Yeah, it does wonders for my anxiety, but this is something, and this is actually, I feel like this is important to say. Yeah, I'm a stoner, and I talk about it on Twitter and stuff like that. I've had a lot of people say, hey, you're a stoner, and that's accurate.
I don't consider you a stoner.
I'm thinking about, well, because I don't act like a stoner, but in terms of the amount that I smoke, sure. I mean, I am. But basically, people come to me, and they're like, you smoke a lot. And they ask me if they should. And I would actually never tell anyone that I'm the wrong person to come to for, like, questions about it. Because everyone's experience with marijuana is wildly different.
Mm-hmm.
It can turn you into a calm, chilled out fella. Or it can really fuck with your paranoia and your anxiety.
I did a paper in college about...
And stuff like that.
Yeah, I did a paper in college about... studying anxiety versus marijuana use, and it's actually over a certain point, the chronic users had a lot more anxiety than people that didn't smoke as much.
So drug use is not something I frown upon within reason and being safe, but it's a very deeply personal thing, and I would never feel comfortable suggesting a person try this or try that, because it's just going to be different. If you're going to try drugs, sit down, throw on some cartoons, get some food in front of you, and that's how you start off.
Okay. Hey, guys. This is Francisco from Retro House, Costa Rica.
Hey.
We'd like to know your opinion about the SmackDown video games on PlayStation 1. I remember for the time they had the multimedia you were expecting. I mean, the intros, the music, the custom fighter options were there, the career mode as well. I mean, and it was trying to mimic the TV show and stuff. For a time, I think it was great, but somehow I don't see many comments about those games these days.
I remember my cousins had, I think it was SmackDown 2, the one with The Rock on the cover. I remember it being pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't have many memories of it, but I remember playing it a decent amount at their house. And I remember I was like, oh, this is pretty good.
I loved them. They, you know, at the time, I desperately wanted a good wrestling game on the PlayStation because N64 was getting all of the good WCW games.
Mm-hmm.
And around the time, and then the PlayStation, they got like WCW versus the World or whatever, which used roughly the same AKI engine, mm-hmm. but it was like the first crack at it. There was way less characters, and it was kind of stiff. And then we got the shit like Nitro and Thunder and Warzone and Attitude, all of which...
Nitro is Nitro is fucking terrible.
Yeah.
It's abysmal.
It's really, really bad.
It's a way step below the other ones you just said. It's a broken game. It's spoilers, it's one of the only half-star games in the upcoming N64 book. It's a fucking abysmal.
So, I was happy when SmackDown finally came out. because they were good games. They're a little bit faster, snappier, a little bit more mashy than like the AKI games, mm-hmm. But they were good. I think the reason why you don't hear a lot of people talk about them is because those were really refined, refined and kind of perfected in the PS2 era. Like when you start talking about PS2 games, those are always like high up on people's lists. They're very well received, so you wouldn't necessarily talk so much about the two that came before it on the PlayStation.
There were only two on the PlayStation?
Yeah, one and two. And I had both of them, and two was a fucking good game. And then they just kept improving upon it on the PS2.
And PS2s are ridiculously good. Like the one I had with Brock on the covers.
Of them had like those, I can't even remember SmackDown vs. Raw. SmackDown vs. Raw, one of them had like the really good, like, create a story mode, and like people still play that shit.
I had that one, and I had the last one before that. I had the last SmackDown with Brock on the cover. That's regarded as one of the best ones. I think it's like 2002 or 2003. Like one of those is regarded as one. Which is the one with Brock on the cover? SmackDown, PS2. Shut Your Mouth?
Yeah. Bring the Pain. That's Bring the Pain.
Or might be Shut Your Mouth. Let's see.
I thought it was Bring the Pain.
Is it Bring the Pain?
Yeah, SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain.
Yes.
That was
Here Comes the
2003.
Pain. That was remarkably good, that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it's a great game.
That one is regarded, wow, that's going for 60 views on eBay, I guess because people like it again. That
it's Here Comes the Pain 2006 in the one SmackDown versus Raw. I think maybe it's 2009 that are the ones always want.
No, Here Comes the Pain, you create your own entrance. Yeah, you create your own wrestler. You had storylines in that, and it was just right. The game, I remember the game being just right. Maybe a little bit too much reversal, but otherwise it was pretty good. You want to do one more? Or you just want to check in with someone?
Let's just check in with whoever we got here.
Okay, who do we got to check in with here?
Do you have any check-ins this week?
We do have a check-in
tonight on Completely Unnecessary Mysteries. Wanted: Pat Contry, a supposed game preservationist and collector.
Pat, what are you doing with my sealed Mr. Boston Vectrix and Panzer Dragoon saga?
Oh, they're gonna get open.
Now wanted for serial game opening. Authorities say Contry could most likely be found perusing flea market sales and is most easily identified by a sharp smell of cheese. Be on the lookout. Also tonight, what is Ian's day job?
Slow it down.
Also tonight, our most popular and longest running segment, Where's Frank?
I am the ghost of Frank. Boo.
We're going to scare the crap out of your kids. All this and more tonight on Completely Unnecessary Mysteries.
Very good.
Thank you, Toy. That was great.
That was wonderful. That was very well done.
He laughs over the lines too much.
Sorry. Well, then don't be so funny.
You got to pull the mic
don't
away.
Don't be so funny. All right, I'll pull my face
nice
away.
Deep cut pulling the haunting Frank clip.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't. Oh, no, it wasn't that. It was a ghost. What? Which one was that? What was the Frank one?
Tonight on Compelling Segment, Where's John? Was Frank?
I am the ghost of Frank.
Was that just them? Might just been them.
No, that was the haunting.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking it was either the haunting. Oh, that's right. When quote Frank shows up in It's a Wonderful Life Punk from 2010.
Oh,
that's
right.
Not actually Frank. That's someone who looks like Frank.
Gotcha.
We're going into the lore.
Lore. That's okay.
That's from the haunting. One of the better NES punk videos. I think it's like 2014 or 15. That's like 8 years ago. Jesus Christ! You've seen that, right? With Floaty Frankhead, he has a hard time while watching Ancient Aliens in that episode. Well, this was fun, one. Ian,
it was a good one. It was a good time.
It's only an hour 32. Yep. We kept it tight, just like how a game should be. Hour 30.
Get it done.
Hour 35, actually. All right. We might do a hangout this
weekend. Yeah, we'll figure that out.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.